Mr. Straub?
Yes.
Can you hear me clearly to begin with?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Can you state your full name and ABC number for the record?
James Leslie Straub, number 70024.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency for 31412B, parole hearing to consider parole to your next consecutive sentence or absolute discharge. I would like to introduce you to the members of the board conducting the hearing with you today. You cannot see us because this is a telephone hearing, but sitting on the bench is the Honorable Mr. David Neal. Next to him is the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson. At the center of the bench is our esteemed board chairman, Dr. C.T. Wright. We also have the Honorable Ms. Gail Rittenhouse, and my name is Louis Quinones. I'll be serving as the panel chairman for this hearing.
Okay.
I'll begin with a summary, and that is Mr. Straub is currently serving life imprisonment for three concurrent counts of attempt to commit first-degree murder, aggravated assault, and aggravated assault. He is pending a two-year consecutive sentence for promoting prison contraband. Does this sound correct so far, Mr. Straub?
Yes, sir, it does.
Okay. Said crimes occurred on or about May 19, 1991. He was approximately 24 years old at the time of the instant offenses. He was convicted by jury trial on December 8, 1993 and sentenced on December 29, 1993. Mr. Straub has a criminal history dating back to 1980, including adult convictions for burglary and theft. He was on Navajo County adult probation at the time of the offense. It should be noted that Mr. Straub's attempt to commit murder represented an escalation in violent crime, at least at that time. According to ADC time computation, he has been parole eligible since June 16, 2017. I will read a brief summary of the offenses in question. On the evening of May 18, 1991, Mr. Straub was at his residence in Winslow, Arizona. The co-defendant, Mr. George Kent, came over to Mr. Straub's house to celebrate the birth of Mr. Kent's daughter. Both men began drinking alcoholic beverages. It was later determined that Mr. Kent became very intoxicated that evening, while Mr. Straub, even though he consumed some alcoholic beverages, was not intoxicated. Somewhere around 3 o'clock a.m. on May 19, 1991, Mr. Straub stated to the co-defendant that he wanted to go out and kick somebody's ass. The co-defendant testified that Mr. Straub wanted to do this for fun or entertainment. Therefore, Mr. Straub and the co-defendant left the residence, began driving around Winslow in the co-defendant's vehicle. Around 3:30 a.m., the two men drove through an alley located behind the Prairie Moon Bar. The owner of the bar had previously placed a small sofa behind the building against the back wall of the bar. As the two men drove through the alley, Mr. Straub apparently noticed a man sleeping on the sofa. This man was later identified as the victim, Mr. Leroy Barton. After driving through the alley, Mr. Straub asked Mr. Kent to go back and drive back through the alley a second time. While driving through the alley a second time, Mr. Straub told Mr. Kent to stop the vehicle. Mr. Straub then pulled out two folding knives, gave one to the co-defendant, opened his own knife, and stepped out of the vehicle. Mr. Straub urged the co-defendant to exit the vehicle and come with him. According to the co-defendant, Mr. Straub then walked up to the man who was sleeping on the sofa behind the bar and began stabbing him. The co-defendant, in his drunken state, then joined in and began stabbing the victim, Mr. Barton. And I'll end it there as just a general summary of the instant offense. Mr. Straub has completed considerable programming in ABC, including classes through Rio Salado Community College. Although this hearing is to consider parole to his next sentence, he has a release plan that includes living with his sister and working in the housing industry as a laborer. He has a moderate history of discipline in ADC from 1989 to 2010, with his last major for assault on an inmate on April 14, 2010, a bit more than 7 years ago. This is his sixth hearing before the board, but only his second hearing based on the instant offenses. He submitted a packet containing numerous certificates of achievement and letters of support from family. In closing, we have a letter from the Navajo County Attorney's Office dated December 5th, 2017, opposing his parole. Mr. Straub, we have new board members since your last parole hearing. This is an opportunity for the board to get to know you. Could you tell us in your own words about the crimes that led to your incarceration? And before you begin, I recognize that I gave quite a bit of information, but I think it's important that we have a dialogue with you to get to know you as the individual who's seeking parole to your next consecutive sentence.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
Do you want me to start with the drinking?
Well, I guess first of all, you heard the summary. Was in your opinion, was that an accurate account of the incident?
A lot of it was. I can go ahead and give you my summary.
Yes, sir.
We were drinking because Mr. Kent's girlfriend had a baby. That started about 5 o'clock earlier that afternoon. We probably consumed about a case and a half to two cases of beer and a fifth of Bacardi rum. So we were at the house most of the night, just drinking, people coming and going. And at one point we did leave the house and we did go over to that Pearl Moon bar earlier in the night, but it was to pick up some marijuana, which had never happened. I don't know if somebody wasn't there or they just didn't have any more. I'm not the one that went up to the door because I didn't know the people, but it was in that same neighborhood. That's the last time I remember going up to the Prairie Moon Bar, but we did go up there. But we drank, and I don't recall the drive the second time, because it would have had been a second time to the Prairie Moon Bar, because the first time my wife was with us, and I know she was at home asleep when this assault happened. So I do know we went a second time. I just don't recall the drive over there because of the drinking. But I do remember the middle of the assault. I remember participating in this assault. It was, I'd say, about 20 to 30 seconds long. I'm not sure. But at some point during that assault, my knife, it was a folding knife, it was a pocket knife that I probably carried it around for 5 or 6 years at that point. At some point, it closed on my hand and lacerated my finger. And as insignificant as that was, it woke me up to what I was doing, what we were doing. And at that point, I stopped, took off, we both ran back to the car, and then drove back to my house. As stated, or what you read the summary beforehand, I don't recall any conversation about going to the curtain bar. I just remember being there and participating in that assault. But I do remember everything after that as well. I remember most of the night. There's just pieces that still escape me all these years.
Sir, I just want to be clear on this. You're saying that there's parts of the evening you don't remember, but are you in denial that you committed the assault?
Oh, no, sir.
No, I just wanted to be clear on that.
No, I fully participated in this assault. I just can't tell you why. I don't know why we went there. I know Mr. Kent, or that summary, he stated why, but I don't remember it. I don't remember driving there. I don't remember looking for anybody, but I do remember stabbing Mr. Barton. I remember fully participating in this crime.
So you had, as I stated in the summary, you had some past criminal history for burglary and theft. Did you have history on your own of getting into fights or violence? Like, is this?
No, this is my first violent crime. Most of my life it was petty theft, burglaries. I was stealing a lot. Me and my friends, as teenagers, smoking weed and need money, so we'd break into a house or a garage, get power tools or stereo equipment, sell it, and go and buy some marijuana. That was basically what I was up to as a juvenile. And it pretty much continued up until this incident. I had a drug habit. I picked that up. I can't remember, I think it was about 18 was the first time I did cocaine. And I think it was about 20 or 21, I believe, was when my last charge or my last conviction was before this incident was for theft and drug paraphernalia. And that's what I was doing. I was stealing to supply my drug habit. That's what incarcerated me the first time, as an adult. But as far as violence, this was my first violent offense.
Well, sir, we're not here to retry the case. I mean, you've been serving your prison sentence. But what do you think inspired this violent outburst? Have you thought about that?
I have. I thought about it many, many times over the years and through some of the programs that they have in here and talking to counselors. I had to go back. I don't want to use my childhood as an excuse. But I had to work out some issues with my parents. They got divorced when I was about 10 years old. My dad was violent. He was a violent drunk. He wasn't always drunk, but when he did drink, he was a violent man. And I was afraid of him. And to be honest with you, I was quite happy when him and my mom got divorced because I wouldn't have to be around him at that time. And I seen him hit my mom, I seen him hit my sisters. But at my age, I felt like I was getting the brunt of it. I remember one point they had a family barbecue. I mean, cousins and friends and everybody out in the backyard barbecuing, all the adults are drinking. And like I said, I was about 10 years old when they divorced, so they were still married at this point. My dad and his friends decided to pants me, take my pants off, and hang me upside down by the swing set by my knees. I wasn't strong enough to pull myself up. So, as I guess any kid would do, I started wailing and crying, and I got jerked off that swing, smacked, and sent in the house for being a little baby. That's the things that I dealt with when I was younger that I think contributed to a lot of my behavior. Once my parents got divorced, we all dealt with it in a different way, you know, and then I had my big brother I had to put up with, and I took some beatings there too, but I know he loved me, you know, he's my older brother, and that's what they do to little brothers. But I had no confidence, I was always afraid, and I found some neighborhood kids who accepted me the way I was, and a couple years down the road, we were getting in trouble, we were doing things we shouldn't be doing, shoplifting, things like that, and at some point, the trouble got more. I remember I stole a car, and I got sentenced to Adobe Mountain, and that was in 1980. So I went to the juvenile DOC. I did 5 months out of 5 to 11 month sentence. And when I came back, all my friends, you know, they're glad to see me and, hey, how's you doing? Happy. But something happened that had pretty much a profound effect on me for almost most of my young adult life, and including then. This happened when I was about 14, 15, is a lot of the kids in school that I had problems with, that used to chase us around and throw rocks at us, they were now, they seemed to be afraid of me. I remember this happening, and I remember talking to one of them about it, who finally came up and talked to me, and he told me these exact words, that he knew you had to be tough to go to jail. And that stuck with me. Thinking about it today and knowing what I know now, that stuck with me. So I kind of used that going forward. You know what I mean? These guys are now afraid of me. They're not throwing rocks at me no more. They're not picking on me no more. And it's all because they think I'm a tough guy. So I ran with that. It was like the worst thing that ever happened to me. But I ran with it because I felt confident. I didn't have to worry about bullies or anything like that. Because in reality, I've been scared most of my life. I used to try and act like I wasn't, not put on front. So I was doing dumb stuff to show off for the girls. And my friends were doing it with me, but when they would do it with me, I had to do it better. I don't know if that's making any sense. It's like I had to drink more, I had to smoke more, and I had to be the standout. I felt more confident that way, you know. And then I also didn't think, being that way, I didn't think anybody could see who I really was, and I didn't really like who I was, and that was a scared kid. And I took that with me everywhere. I mean, I took that after this incident that put me in prison, and I think that this has a big reason or a big, I don't know, I don't want to use it as an excuse. I think it shaped my attitude. You know, as long as I'm doing things that are outrageous, then people leave me alone. Because I remember, and it worked. I mean, there was a lot of kids that used to pick on me, and they weren't picking on me no more. They were actually showing me respect. And I ate it up, so to speak. I mean, it like put fuel in me to keep doing it more and more. As a matter of fact, I started to admit to things that I wasn't even doing. I mean, you'd hear about it. It's Winslow's a small town. Somebody got arrested for this, or somebody got arrested for that. And I would lie to my friends and girls. Oh yeah, I was with him when that happened. I was with him when that happened. There's a few times I had to get pulled down to the station and be told to quit lying and quit doing these things because it's interrupting their investigations, you know. It was terrible. I kept going on with this all the way up in here. I did that for about 10 years in here, you know, after Gibson's done his crime. I did the same thing. But I believe that these things are the reasons that I've done a lot of the things I've done. It's what I've come up with. It's what some counselors have helped me see, is that I was afraid and I didn't want anybody else to see that fear. And when they did see it, I'd get angry or something about it. I'd always have to try to change their opinion of me. And it wasn't that I was actually that tough guy, I just didn't want them to find out that I wasn't. And I lived with that for about my first 10 years in here on the sentence, doing the same behavior over and over again, trying to make people look at me in a certain way because I didn't want them to see me how I felt on the inside. I hope that makes sense.
Sir? Actually, I think that's I find you being pretty straightforward with the board, that was really compelling dialogue. One question I want to ask you real quick is that was a lot of good background. What happened with the prison contraband? What was that exactly?
Oh, this consecutive sentence?
Yes, and I'll ask you to keep this short because you have supporters here and I want to give them plenty of time to speak too.
Yes, I had a drug habit. It was a syringe. It was a needle to use drugs with. They did a shakedown on my cell, and they found it in my cell, and I told them it was mine, so that I wouldn't get my cellie in trouble right along with me.
Well, were you using drugs inside prison? Because we know they're available.
Yes, sir. Yes, absolutely.
What were you using?
That's why I had that thing, was because I was using it.
Oh, okay. And what were you using, sir?
I was using heroin.
Okay. I'm going to ask my fellow board members if they have any questions for you. Any questions from fellow board members? Okay, Mr. Straub, again, you gave us a pretty detailed background story. We'd like to hear from your supporters. The one thing I didn't say, and I should have said at the beginning, is that you have several supporters in the room, as well as a advocate. So I'm going to turn to Ms. Hamm here and say, Ms. Hamm, is there an order that supporters would like?
Yes.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, they'll be coming to the podium and speaking once at a time, Mr. Straub, okay, sir?
All right. Will I have an opportunity to still speak later?
Yes, near the end, and I'm sorry, I didn't necessarily mean to cut you off, but near the end you'll have an opportunity to give a final statement before the board.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, sir. Yes, ma'am.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Janet Hugh, and I'm the sister of James Straub. And before I start to tell the story, which my story was told by my brother, but anyway, before I start, I will let you know that I don't condone his behavior. 26 years ago, the family doesn't condone it. He's definitely spent his time. I've watched him grow, but my intent is just to kind of tell you what he told you. I think our childhood had a lot to do with it. And when my dad left, my mom had no skills. She was an orphan growing up. She had no skills. So when dad left, mom got a job as a bartender working nights. And it was me and the two younger brothers. Jeff, being the oldest, did take Jimmy under his wing, was his friends, and went out and had fun and did their thing. I had, you know, no idea that kind of stuff was going on. But me and my brother Jeff battled this fight quite a bit ourselves. But we were raising our kids, raising ourselves, is really what it was. And I got married at 16 and left home. When Jeff graduated, he was lucky enough to have joined the Navy and left. So it really left Jimmy, and he was gone, doing his own thing, running the streets, doing everything he just explained to you. All petty crime and thefts and things like that, nothing violent. I did what I could to help Mom. Kind of feel a little bit like maybe I should have stuck around, you know, looking back and reflecting on my own life. I probably should have stuck around and sucked it up and helped Mom a little bit instead of running myself. So I did. And Jeff ran, left Jimmy there. The incident Jimmy talked about, I was there that day on the swing set. And it was humiliating, and he was treated like that. He was a little pretty boy, and he could get picked on and things like that by everybody, including myself. But I will tell you, it wasn't until I married my husband myself that I realized how to parent and be a parent and a grandmother today. And my brother, who's now deceased, Jeff, was in the Navy. The Navy shaped him. And I will tell you, DOC has shaped Jimmy. And I will tell you a little bit more from the last hearing that I have learned today, and I want to share that with you because I think DOC deserves it. But anyway, has shaped it. Jimmy as an individual. We have great conversations. Doug and I have always supported my brother. When my mom passed, we really took a forward stance in helping Jimmy, going there and seeing him all the time, and just being there for him. And his daughter, who's in the room, Kayla, he was incarcerated when she was 3 months old. She's always been a part of his life. Us as a family has always made sure he's had her. She has a grandson, Alec, who's not here today, and he shares time with Alec as well and with us as a family. And I just want to share that with you guys, let you know that We've had great conversations. The turning point that I saw in Jimmy was actually after Mom had gone and we were at DOC. And he told me, he says, Jan, I don't have anybody to blame but myself. He goes, I spent my whole life trying to blame other people for who I am and what I did. And he goes, I only can blame myself what I did. I can't blame Dad for the parent he was or Mom or what we didn't have. I can only blame myself and I can only fix myself. So I respect that he's done that. So we continued our relationship, supporting him, having great family talks, talking about Christianity, things like that. And I feel like deep down in my heart, he is ready to go to the next sentence. He is a good man. He loves his family. He's very calm. He's earned the respect of DOC. I mean, I have seen him go from, you know, having a real hard time with the police to really now kind of like enjoying his time. He voluntarily entered the integrated housing program. I don't know if you guys, it's a fairly new program, are familiar with that. And it's been about a year. That's why I said when I came last time in April to speak, it was so new. But now I'm there at least once a month. My husband and I go to talk to Jimmy, see him play dominoes, try to beat him. But I will tell you, he has earned the respect of the DOC officers, and Jimmy has earned respect in his behaviors, his actions, he works, and it's good to see. And I will also share with the IHP for DOC, that's a great program, the tension that I have felt for 25 years going in and seeing my brother has been horrific. As a human, as law-abiding citizen, it's been hard to do. But today I go visit my brother. Inmates are getting along, they're different races, they're talking, there's no racial, there's no gang, and I gotta tell you, it's a good feeling. And now I see a bunch of criminals serving time, in my opinion, when they should be without the racism and without gang activity. So with that, I'm gonna close, tell you a little bit about myself. I'm design studio manager for a large builder here in the Valley, Tate Morrison. I run a staff of about 8 individuals. I've been in the business about 23 years, so I've developed some great relationships. Prior to that, I was an executive director and fundraiser for the Boys and Girls Club. So I also know and familiar with nonprofit. What I have done for my brother, and I will continue to do, is support him when he's out. He will live with me and my husband, and I've got 2 letters of employment from the trade. And the reason is the vocational skills that he has got in DOC. You know, plumbing, the trades that he has done. I've got 2 of my very good friends in the trades that would hire him if he were being released today, and we know he's not. Secondly, nonprofit side, Jimmy has shared with us in the last couple years that he would like to get involved with the churches and also reach out and help others who may be faced with the same situation he was and try to save. And we did that at the Boys and Girls Club. If you could save one child, you've done your job. So I'm here to support him, and I'm going to close and just hope that you guys listen to everything that was said today, understand. He's been good for almost 8 years. I'm proud of him, and I thank you guys for your time today.
Hold on a second. I just want to see if there's any questions. Right. No, I just want to see if there's any questions from fellow board members. Any questions? Thank you, and thank you for your service, ma'am.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Doug Ebert. A little bit about myself. I spent 34 years in law enforcement. I retired here in Arizona as the Assistant Special Agent in Charge with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. I'm also a board member of the Substance Abuse Coalition in Fountain Hills, and I'm also a member of the former Narcotics Officers Association as well. Jimmy is my brother-in-law. And Janet is my wife for the last 25 years. And I can tell you, my relationship with Jimmy has pretty much been the whole time he's been incarcerated. I was stationed in Carlsbad, California for a number of years. And during that time, when we would come back to Arizona to visit family, Janet would always go and try to visit Jimmy, and no matter where he was, somewhere in the state. And at that time, I'll be honest with you, we didn't really have that much in common. Law enforcement, he's in prison. And the type of life he was living in the prison wasn't something that I condoned. He was pretty much you know, basically running with the bad side rather than the good side at that time. But as time went on, he matured. I saw that he was basically sorry for a lot of the decisions he had made in prison and in life, and was taking responsibility, which was probably the most important thing, for some of the actions he had done. So based on that, I started going to the prison more and more with Janet, and to the point now where I pretty much go every month with her, sometimes more than once a month. But I saw that change, and I think to me, the defining moment, as Janet mentioned, was when his mom passed away. I think that really hit hard to him, and I remember him saying, he goes, you know what, I can spend the rest of my life in here and keep doing what I'm doing, and that'll be my life. Or I can make a change, I can, you know, change what I'm doing, and look to the future, and maybe one day walk out of here a free man, and that's what I want to do. So to me, that was the deciding point that I saw in his life. So at that point, he started withdrawing himself from a lot of the pressures that were inside the prison for him to commit illegal acts and one thing. And one of the best things, the best programs, as Jan had mentioned, is this integrated housing program that DOC has. He volunteered for that, and I can tell you, it is night and day from everything you've experienced. DOC, I don't know whether it's just a coincidence with the mandate, or if it's something they've done by design, but it's really, really changed. I mean, we walk into these visitations now, and you see African Americans, you see Latinos, and you see whites, you know, talking, joking, embracing each other. It's like if they didn't have fences and uniforms, I thought I'd be in a community center playing cards and dominoes. I mean, that is how it's just so different from anything I've experienced. But as we said too, Jimmy hasn't been in trouble. He hasn't had a ticket in almost 8 years. He's kept himself very clean. He's got the respect of all the correctional officers there. I mean, they engage with the inmates as well and joke around with them. It's really a whole different atmosphere. And I know he's participated, as mentioned, in a lot of the training programs, the community college programs. I think he's proved himself to the Arizona Department of Corrections, himself and his family, that he has made that turn in his life. And it's funny because we just went to visit last weekend, and even the correctional staff there is like saying, Jimmy, we're praying for you for next week and good luck and that type of thing. So that's even the kind of relationship he has with the correctional staff. And I can assure you, while this is only looking to parole him to his consecutive sentence, I know in the future we've talked about him residing with us at our home in Cotton Hills until he's on his feet. We also have a rental property in North Scottsdale that he can occupy once he's up and running. He's got, I think, two job offers when he gets out in the construction industry. And, you know, I think he's got more family support and job offerings than many college graduates have today. So, I mean, we're there for him. So he has the support. He is not going to return to the life that and the surroundings that he once had. I can assure you that our friends and family are aware of Jimmy, and they support us, and they'll embrace him the same way we will.
Yes, sir. Yes. You've been following him in the prison system for how long?
Since he was incarcerated.
Okay. When do you think he turned a corner? Because he talked openly, and I believe he was being very honest about the sort of this tough guy syndrome. And I get the backstory too. I appreciate when people say they're not making excuses, and that's an important thing. But at the same time, there are contributing factors in some cases to people's underlying emotions or inability to deal with those emotions. But when do you think he turned a corner?
I think it was when his mother passed away in early 2009. And I think it was a combination of things. I think that probably was something that jolted him. But he had been maturing. I mean, he just talking to him as he matured, you could see that, you know, he was saying that a lot of these young guys coming in, they're doing what I used to. He goes, oh my gosh. He goes, I wish I could convince him not to make those decisions, you know, and make the same mistakes I did. So he was also seeing what, it was also a reflection of what he was like when he first came in But I think the maturity started to take hold, and the fact that, you know, he was approaching, you know, most of his, halfway through his sentence, and he's saying, you know what, there might be a light at the end of this tunnel as well, so I need to make a decision here, whether I'm going to spend the rest of my life incarcerated or change my life. And that's what I saw. When his mom passed away, that was when I actually heard it from his mouth, that, hey, I'm not doing this anymore.
Thank you, sir. Any questions from fellow board members? Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, board members. My name is Donna Hamm, and I'm an advocate for Mr. Strom. I've gotten to know his family. I was here at the last hearing that we had in April of 2017, and we didn't have this full board, so we appreciate the opportunity to appear before all of you today and thank Chairman Wright and Mr. Quinones for your support at that last hearing. I did turn in a packet for you, and I hope you got the packet.
Red cover, yes, ma'am.
Yeah, not sure you get yours in color.
Yeah, kind of tough to miss the red cover.
Okay. And just wanted to make sure you've already mentioned that and acknowledged the program receipts or program certificates that are in there and the support letters. Everyone here today, of course, is a supporter. We tried to condense the presentations in the interest of time and your economy here for all the hearings you have to do. I would like to point out that we do have one more job offer, and I'd like to present that if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, just you know the rules, but okay. Then we'll hold on to the
yes.
Document.
And there's one copy for each of you.
Thank you, ma'am.
So even though this is a parole to a consecutive sentence, we do want you to be aware and assured that Mr. Straub does have very gainful employment opportunities when he gets out. And of course, you've already heard about the offer of residence from his sister and brother-in-law. You do have a letter from the county attorney, and I would like to just comment on that very briefly. Certainly, the county attorney has one perspective on this case, but I would like to point out that that perspective is from 1991, and he does not know Mr. Straub. He doesn't know any of the history that has occurred since that time, and especially is unaware of the testimony you've heard today and the insights that Mr. Straub has shared with you about why he feels he was in the state of mind at the time he committed this crime and how he has grown and matured and progressed and understood why he was doing those things and what he needed to do to change. So I would just like to point out that the county attorney wrote the same exact letter for last April's hearing. He changed the date on it and wrote it again for this December hearing. And honestly, I don't think he can write any other letter. He will continue to write the same letter over and over and over again until I don't know when, and I guess as long as Mr. Straub is incarcerated, because he doesn't have an up-to-date perspective on Mr. Straub. And while it's, of course, logical and reasonable to consider the offense behavior, we are asking you to go beyond that. We are asking you to look at Mr. Straub's achievements, his development, his self-reflection, and his ability to change, as we all hope that we have changed for the better when we need to. And I would point out that he was offered a plea at the original time. It would have ended up, the plea offer, which is in your packet, was to 15.75 or 28 years flat time. But obviously, 28 years flat time would have been flat and he would have been done. No parole required. He was recently reclassified on your institutional progress report, it shows that he is currently a 4-3, and in fact, he was recently reduced to a level 3 because of his good institutional behavior. That simply has not been reflected yet on his sheet. And I would just say to you, I know this is not a consideration, but I think this is really an example of his different way of handling things. Mr. Straub, within the last 6 or 8 months, has recently gone through a bout of cancer. And I was able to help him get some treatment that he needed. And he has come through that with very hopeful and positive results, thank God. But the way he handled it, he wasn't angry about it. He wasn't desperate about it. He was very circumspect and just did all of the right things to contact the right people in a very professional and appropriate way to get the help he needed, to get the treatment he needed. And I think that's indicative of a change in the way he may have handled things 15 or 20 years ago. And that's one example of a crisis that he handled appropriately and maturely and with respect rather than lashing out and blaming other people. So today we are here to ask you to simply move him to his consecutive sentence. And with that, he would come back after a couple of years where you would have an opportunity then to consider him for parole to the community, at which time you'd have an additional 2 years to look at his behavior, judge what he says, hear the way he responds to your questions, and determine then whether you feel he's appropriate at that time for release to the community. And we would ask for your support today. By the way, it's his sister's birthday. You'd be giving her a wonderful birthday present today. Thank you. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Well, I do want to thank you, as always, Ms. Hamm, for appearing before the board. You know, this is, we operate in the open meeting laws, so the dialogue goes in every direction, and I think you gave a great statement.
Thank you.
And are there more people that will
speak? No, we decided, they're all here in support. They just decided, because you had a list of hearings, that we would, you would know we're here in support.
Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you, Ms. Hamm.
Thank you.
Back to you, Mr. Straw. Can you hear me? I wanted, of course, you will have a chance to give a final statement. In just a few moments here, I wanted to ask a couple of follow-up questions that I didn't think to ask, and that was because you had a drug history. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that you've probably cleaned up. Have you cleaned up from your drug habit?
Yes, sir.
How long have you been clean, was the question.
It's not a coincidence that I've been 8 years almost without disciplinary write-up, because that's around the same time that I gave up using anything.
Well, I like hearing that, because that was my educated guess. But it was not a question that I asked earlier. It just it hit me as we were hearing from some of your supporters. Again, we're getting close to the end of your hearing now. Yes, Ms. Rittenhouse.
Could I just ask?
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Straub, it looks like there's restitution in a significant amount, $96,000 some. You probably have done this, but have you given thought to how you're going to attack that?
I want to do the best I can with it. I don't know. It is a lot of money, but I owe that, and I'm not going to try and dodge any responsibility of paying it. I want to be able to make a living, but at the same time, I want to take care of the responsibilities that I have as well. So I have every intention of paying what I can when I can.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, Mayor.
Yes, Mr. Johnson. Thank you.
So I just wanted to ask you, because this incident occurred, you guys have been drinking, but it appears it wasn't your original idea to go out and stab someone, was it?
Not that I'm aware of. It was said in that statement that he made, but I don't remember ever making that statement. I don't remember the drive there. So, but I can't say that that didn't happen, that I didn't say that. I just don't remember it. So I don't want to say anybody's lying. I'm just saying it, it was never a part of my memory.
Okay, so in your memory, you did state earlier that you did recall, you just didn't recall driving back over there, but you recalled taking part in the actual incident itself, correct?
Yes, I do. I don't even remember how it started, but I do remember participating in it. Mm-hmm. I was participating in this act. I inflicted several wounds on Mr. Barton, and at the point of when that knife closed on my hand is when I realized what I was doing. I mean, my injury was really insignificant. It was just a little cut, but it did wake me up to what I was doing. And at that point, I knew very well what was happening.
Okay.
And I had to get out of there.
So here's my question to you, sir, and I'm not sure if you can explain this to me or not, but can you, this is a situation that occurred that under the influence, it happened. You don't really recall how you got back there, but what prevents this type of situation from occurring again if you don't know what caused it or what really triggered it to go out and stab an innocent person?
I am never, ever going to take a drop of alcohol or any drug again as long as I live. Mm-hmm.
So you think it was the alcohol and drugs
go ahead.
Do you think it was the alcohol and drugs that caused you to go out and get involved in this too? I mean, this is a different situation because it was no confrontation or no resistance conflict that occurred prior to this incident occurred. This was just gentlemen.
Yes, Mr. Barton did nothing to nobody. There was no reason for this to happen. But I do know that had I not been under the influence, that I would not have participated in anything like that. I've done a lot of dumb stuff drinking in my life, but that was the first time I've ever done something like that that I didn't have full memory of, if you understand. I don't know if I'm explaining that right, but I do know that if I wasn't under the influence, I never would have participated in it. Now, whether I was the cause of it happening or whether Mr. King was, I can't say, but I can tell you I never would have participated if I would not have been under the influence.
Okay, I understand that. I was just trying to see, and I do understand you did say that you don't recall what led up to it, but I was trying to have some understanding of what was it that triggered the idea of just going out and attacking an innocent person.
I don't know. That's what I don't recall. I don't recall the why, and I don't recall going there. I do recall. This is what's funny about alcohol. I mean, this is what's funny about somebody who abuses alcohol the way I abused it. Was I've had blackouts before from drinking way too much, and usually what you forget will come back. It don't always all come back, but most of it does. And I remember when I woke up the next morning in jail, there was a point when I didn't know what I was in jail for. Mm-hmm. It took about 20 or 30 minutes of me being awake, and then, oh my God, you know what I mean? Over and over again, oh my God, and I started remembering things. And based off some of those things that I remembered, I told some lies. Because as you well know, that I didn't take responsibility for this in the beginning. And it's, in those lies, the way I did it was based off memories, but I didn't have all the memories. You know what I mean? And I just kept digging myself a deeper hole with that. But alcohol, that's it's not the first time I had a blackout, but it's the first time I've done that I lost my car once drinking so much and didn't remember where my car was. For 2 days, I did not know where my car was until I seen it at a gas station. And then come to find out, I told the people they can use it until I come and got it. So I don't know how to explain other than I know that everybody who drinks don't go through this, but I didn't drink. I think I explained that I always had to do more than everybody else. I drank, and I would drink more, and I would drink more, and I would drink until I passed out. And I wish I would have passed out that night. I wish I would have passed out. Because maybe none of this would have happened.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Any other questions from fellow board members? I have a quick follow-up on that, Mr. Straub. This is Louis Quinones again, and that is, did you find yourself sort of an angry drunk when you were drinking a lot when you were young? I mean, you were very young when this happened.
Yes.
Was that a pattern for you?
When I drank, I had the tendency to have more of an attitude. If I wasn't... I don't know how to say this without being, I want to be respectful to the panel. If I wasn't trying to get with a girl when I was drinking, I was usually in some kind of animosity with somebody or at some point. My mom used to tell me she didn't like me when I drank because I was mean. She said I'd get mean. She said I was like my father, like that. She told me, you and your father both are mean drunks. And I did. I got in fights drinking, but I never did this. I remember those fights. So,
well, I guess
I had that tendency, sir.
The important question would be, have you dealt with the underlying anger? Because, you know, we listen to a lot of hearings, and I don't mean to compare, but, you know, there's a lot of information that... You know, the criminal behavior that people get involved in when they're under the influence of drugs or alcohol is not quite the excuse, meaning that certainly their inhibitions were lowered, but underneath that is, you know, whatever's boiling over. So I guess my question would be, you as a sober person, do you feel like less of an angry person now? Do you feel like you've dealt with, you know, whatever was whatever your demons were, sir? Am I making sense?
Yeah, my demons, I think I touched on my demons. I was always afraid that people would see that I was afraid. I always felt like a coward when I was young.
I don't mean to cut you off. I guess what I'm getting at is, it goes without saying that for your health, you're going to need to lead a sober lifestyle, but in your sober world, have you come to grips with whatever's underneath, so that you're just an overall less angry, safer person?
Yes, that's what I wanted to touch on when I asked if I would be able to speak again.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, because I was asked about this new case, what happened with it, this 2 year case, and I told you, well, I had me a drug habit. It took 2 more years on the end of my sentence, and although at first it took the air out of me, you know what I mean? It was right at the half point of my 25 to life, and I'm thinking, well, all right, I'm getting to the downside of this, and then I'm going to get 2 more years, so I was disappointed, and it took the air out of me, but I wasn't just disappointed with getting 2 more years. At that point, it was like I was fed up. And I was disappointed with my whole life up to that point, you know? And I just told myself I had to get out of my own way. I'd never move forward. So I took a class. I actually had to wait to get in it because there was other people in it, and I kept talking to the CO4 about it. It was called Thinking Straight. This is where I learned a little bit about me and fear. I took this Thinking Straight class, and the first thing I told him was what happened on this new case. and he showed me a video, because I didn't tell you guys this, but when I caught this 2 more years, when they charged me with it, I didn't feel this way. When I was sentenced to 2 more years, this feeling didn't happen, but they took me back to my unit. I went to court in Douglas, or Cochise County. I was in Yuma at this time. They took me back to my unit. They put me in a brand new cell with a new cellie. I sat down the things that I had and didn't know who he was. I introduced myself. He introduced himself. He sat there on his bunk. And I started to wash my face because it was a hot, sweaty ride. And I just started crying. That's how fed up and irritated I was with the course of my life. You know, I started crying. And I never cried in front of anybody, especially not in there, because, well, you don't want to show weakness. That's my biggest fear, is I don't want to show weakness. But I did it anyhow. I couldn't help it. I could look in the mirror and see this guy behind me who didn't know me. He had a shocked look on his face, and to help him feel better, I started singing. And just out of nowhere, started singing Joy to the World. But I told this to this counselor in his Thinking Straight class about how I just started crying. He showed us a movie called American History X. And I don't know if anybody's seen that. It's a graphic movie. But there's another man who's in prison for a lot of crime. And in this movie, he got raped and he's in a hospital in a prison infirmary. And the same thing happened to him. This counselor man came and talked to him and said, your brother's getting in trouble. And he goes, well, you've got to get me out of here. He said, I need something from you first. And he said, what? He goes, I need you to ask yourself a question. And this man says, what? He goes, I need you to ask yourself, has anything you ever done made your life any better? And that man began to cry right there on the spot. And that's why he showed me this movie in this class. But this class, what it did for me was we got to do a lot of role playing. You know, you throw a scenario out at us. It was about agents in there. He throws in, this person did this, how would you react 10 years ago, and how would you react now? It was a lot of role playing. But that class, I went up to him and I talked to him. We did essays and stuff, and he'd write all my essays. Could have been, should have been a writer, and he called me up at the class and talked to me. He made a special effort towards me. But I told him, and this is true from this point on, because I took classes before 2004, before this case, but I never took them seriously. You know, it was like, I didn't have the right attitude for him. I now had the right attitude for him. I took this class serious, and I've taken every class since then serious. The one thing I learned in this class was about my anger. And I've talked about my fear of people knowing that I was just a scared little kid. Well, this is what we found out. And if you think about it, well, I don't know if you think that. After he told me this, and after I thought about it, I thought, how did I not know this? That anger is almost always fear expressed outwardly. You know what I mean?
Well, actually, I
think about all the times I got mad in my life and why I got mad. My girlfriend go out and not tell me where she is. She come home and I start yelling at her. I fear she's out not being faithful. That's why I got angry. You know what I mean?
I was going to say, so in this case, I actually do understand where you're coming from. I think we're getting close to the end here. Is there anything else you'd like to share without repeating yourself? You've shared quite a bit of information with us, and we appreciate it.
Well, I would like to, can I say a couple things that I know?
Real fast. So the thing I don't want to do is cut you off, because this is your hearing, but okay. I think we've gathered enough information.
I'll try to be brief then, okay?
Okay, sir.
I know who I used to be, and I know who I am today. So I'd like to share a few of what I know. First, I know I failed Mr. Barton and his family in a very bad way. I also know that I failed my family. And I failed myself. But I also know that I'm not that same person today. And I know that I'm asking of the members of this board, I know what I'm asking of you. I wish there was a way to show you how much I've grown, how genuine I am about my growth. Because I know you got a difficult decision, so the best thing I can say is I've worked hard on myself. I tried to make my actions match my words. I don't think the same way. I don't act the same way. I starve the negative in my life. I feed the positive in my life. And because of that, I'm a better person. I'm proud of that. My family's proud of that. And the only thing I can say is, if you could see what I feel and what I think, then I think you guys would understand why my sister's proud and why I'm proud. I think that's about it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Straub. It certainly has been very good dialogue. We're going into discussion now. It may sound like we're speaking with you, especially because we're on the telephone, but is the board discussing the case amongst itself before we come to our individual and independent decisions? So if you'll just remain on the phone and remain quiet, we'll come back to you shortly with our decision. Okay, sir?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Straub. The board is now in discussion. Fellow board members, I do believe that this has been a very interesting dialogue with Mr. Straub. He's certainly been through a journey inside the correction system. And before we get into the discussion, I will begin by saying that I never want to forget that there's a victim in these violent crimes that result in such long prison sentences. And as we've seen in other types of hearings, it can get pretty emotional. I will put out, for the sake of the discussion amongst fellow board members, I think that the plea consideration by the county attorney is meaningful. Why do I say this, regardless of how we vote one way or the other, is that when we're confronted with a case that is really heinous, we're dealing with a certain type of offender, I think there are some cases in which that is just not on the table. It's not a consideration. It is such a serious crime, such a serious event. Those sort of discussions aren't even going to come to the table. So that being stated, and without belaboring this, I will say that I am open to parole to the next consecutive sentence, but I also recognize that this could be a contentious issue, in as much that that would be a consideration for parole to a, I think, if I'm reading this correctly, his next consecutive sentence is quite short, but that's where I'll begin the discussion, and I look forward to hearing the collective wisdom of my colleagues. Yes, Mr. Johnson.
I do understand. I think Mr. Stubbs is definitely trying to make some changes. I'm having some issues at it. I'm just not understanding what he's done to really rehabilitate on that anger issue. I mean, this is just a situation where the victim was an innocent person. It was nothing that triggered it. No argument, no fight, no nothing. Somebody's sleeping on the couch and they decided to go out and do something to somebody. I know that he says that drugs and alcohol as a result of drinking was the big part of it, and that he's had several blackouts while he was in an intoxicated condition. He's not going to do any alcohol or drugs anymore. So I just have a little bit of problem with that's where I'm having some concern and some issue with this particular incident, if that he doesn't know what triggered it other than the drugs or the alcohol. But I would think even
even drinking, you don't get a, and people on alcohol, you don't get someone, you know, usually there's something, a cause or something that triggers it, but this situation, we don't know if there was an argument, or, well, there was an argument, because they didn't know this guy. They just decided to go out and stab somebody. I would hope that if he does go to his next, you know, I'm just having a little bit of issue. That's why I'm having an issue at.
Thank you, sir. Any other fellow board members?
Thank you. I think that, you know, it comes a time when one has to really listen and concentrate on. I think if we look at this just on the basis of what he said, that would leave some doubts. However, I am impressed with commitment from his family. I think with his brother-in-law having been involved and being retired from criminal justice system, hopefully, if this board saw fit to move him to his next consecutive sentence, this would help him to prepare for the future. I also think that his I think that the program that his brother-in-law suggested out where they reside, I think would hopefully that would be able to help assistance to him as well. I do think that it is, one has to weigh within each of us, have to weigh within ourselves. Is this a time for clemency? Is this a time for mercy and grace? At this particular moment, and I'm prepared to listen, to continue to listen to other board members, I'm leaning towards mercy and grace. Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Ms. Rittenhouse?
Yeah, I am as well. I very much appreciate the amount of community, you know, family support that he has, which there are a great many people who don't have that, and I think it might be one of the things that helps him be successful ultimately, because he's not going to be released now, but when the time comes. And the other thing is, this gives him plenty of time to prepare mentally and in other ways for when he is ultimately released.
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Mr. Neal? Okay. I'm going to go ahead and make a motion and see where the votes land. And my motion is, based on the totality of everything we've discussed today, and of course a large case file, to grant parole to the next consecutive sentence. Not absolute discharge, but parole to the next consecutive sentence for Mr. James Straub, ADC number 70024, and that is my motion.
I'll second.
Agree.
That's a unanimous vote for parole to the next consecutive sentence. Let me make sure I check off the right boxes. And 412B consecutive. And he's typed denied, of course, is absolute discharge. And because he's being paroled to his next consecutive sentence, I don't think there's any conditions of release. Well, it says that for the next consecutive sentence, I will note, abide by institutional rules, partake in available programming, and of course, refrain from disciplinary infractions. And it sounds like, God willing, he's heading down the right path. Mr. Straub, have you heard our decision?
Excuse me?
I'm sorry, did you hear our decision?
No, sir, I did not.
Okay, we've voted unanimously to grant you parole to your next consecutive sentence. We recognize that you have the remainder of your next sentence, but we wish you the best. Do you have any questions for us?
No, sir, I do not. No, sir. I want to say thank you, and I'm going to continue to work hard.
Well, we certainly encourage you to do that. We want to see you succeed. We want to see you, you know, hopefully when that time comes, should you be released from the correction system to be successful out here back in the community. Again, I will remind you that there's some conditions of, it's not release, but of granting you parole to your next consecutive sentence, and that is that you continue to abide by institutional rules, partake in available programming, and refrain from disciplinary infractions. Do you think you can do that?
Absolutely.
Then we wish you all the best. Anything further, Mr. Board Chairman?
No,
this
sir.
Will conclude our hearing, and I want to thank the supporters for attending today, and thank you, Mr. Straub.
Thank you.